Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. Actor and director Penny Marshall is our guest. Her new book is My Mother Was Nuts. In it, she talks about her childhood, her film career, and life on the set of her hit sitcom, Laverne and Shirley.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8,
it would seem to me in a situation where the two of you are working so closely together, you have this show on your shoulders that...
Well, it was on all our shoulders.
Right, but it would put a tension on the relationship. It seemed as though there were tensions that would flare up from time to time between
you and
Sidney.
Well, any family is going to have an argument once in a while.
Right.
You know, any family. Your family. I don't care, you know?
But in reading the book, it seemed in the end that it ended badly.
Well, it was anticlimactic, you know? And, of course, she got married, which I was very happy. She was pregnant, going to have a baby. Great. Yeah, but I wasn't fond of her husband. And then he stepped in with all these rules, which were crazy rules. And I tried to speak to her, you know, like I had done before when she got rid of the creators, and brought in my friend Monica Johnson, who was Jerry Belson's sister, who I knew for years, you know, who was on Paul Sand.
Right.
So I knew Monica, so that one didn't bother me. It's just she had a manager that was feeding into her insecurities. We're all insecure, you know?
Right.
Everyone in this business is insecure. It's a crazy business. Then Bill was making these rules, you know? And I said, Cindy, lay in bed the whole time. I don't care.
You said you do all the
moves. I'll do the running around.
Right.
Just be the biggest pain in the ass pregnant person we've ever seen. No, that's fine with me. What if you want to go? You know, he said, well, she could only work this many hours. I said, well, she's tired in 4 hours. You know, it was just stupidity on his part. But she was in love and thought he was taking care of her. And he wouldn't let her speak to any of her friends. I called her a million times and couldn't get through. Then as soon as David Landa called me, Squeaky, and said they broke up, I called her immediately. Said, do you need a place to live, stay? What do you need? And I know her kids. And I told her, call Goldie. Because he did the same thing to Goldie.
Mm. And she'd know.
And she just doesn't want to do it, you know?
And you talk about her coming over and staying with you and having the conversation that you should have had 15 years ago.
Yeah.
But in the end, she still very much believed that
Bill was just protecting her.
Yeah.
So she had, and she has kids, so she didn't want to. And the kids don't like him. I know Emily and that. And that's so thrilled with him. And Kate and, you know, and our brother don't like him.
But your relationship is good now.
No, we're fine. She's in New York rehearsing a play. And
you kind of chalk it up to you agree to disagree.
Well, yeah, because what can I say? Yeah. It was just, you know, I mean, Michael left too to do Spinal Tap.
Right.
You know?
In the fact that you write in the book about how it was ultimately Whoopi Goldberg who was doing Jumping Jack Flash who had dinner with you and then shortly
I ran into her. I had met her. It was her birthday. We had dinner. And then, yeah, I went up to her hotel because she was already shooting. They started. They were like 10 days in. And Joel Silver and Larry Gordon saw us, so somebody told them. And I came home to get winter clothes because I bought an apartment in New York. And then I got home to L.A. and they called and screamed, you're going to do this movie. I hadn't even been in enough one-camera movies, you know? I only knew three-camera in front of an audience. And my brother said, they pay you to learn, you know? They said, don't tell anyone. You know, they screamed. I said, can I read it, you know?
Hey, stop. Call the police. You can't miss me. I'm a little black woman in a big silver box. Over the top of it says phone.
So I have a good phone book. So I called in my brother, my daughter, Jim Belushi, John Lovitz, the late Phil Hartman, Lynn Marie Stewart, a lot of people to fill out. It's a big office, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you need people to talk, make up things, you know? So they were good improvisers. And I brought Jimmy Belushi back to life because he was killed in something, but I needed him back. So I put a bandage on your head. Come here, grab her.
You worked through that, and the film, it was not commercially successful, but it was a learning experience for you, and it got you the next job.
Well, Jim Brooks handed me big.
Yeah.
because his editor, Richie Marks, and George Bowers, who just recently died, came on because, I mean, the guy who edited it together made it to North by Northwest. It was a big action film. And I thought, well, I think you got to jump that question. The guy has to show up, you know, and take it to dinner or something. So I had a different angle on it. So they recut it for me. And Richie worked for Jim, so they handed me big, not knowing the world had turned it down, by the way, because I don't read the trade so much. You know, especially if you're working, you don't have time to do nothing. So it's read. I understand when I'm big, I'm going, you know. But everyone turned it down because there were two other movies like it.
It was such a beautiful film. I mean, obviously, Tom Hanks was
great. Yeah, but
great
he had passed, but then he came back.
Robert De Niro.
So the first one I had no pre-production on. I was hired on a Friday, shot Monday. This one I had two pre-productions on. So it was strange.
And
but he was doing Dragnet, Tom. But he had passed. Everyone had passed. So I said, I'll go a different way. And look who's in all the comedies now, folks.
Robert De Niro.
Okay, I'm not a crazy person. I knew Bob for years. And he had a different sense of humor. But he had a sense of humor. And he was a very polite guy, different than the parts he plays, you know. But he's in every comedy now.
There was such a sweetness to that film, though. There was such an innocence to the
well,
character.
Well, it has to be played for truth. It's a high-concept movie. But everyone had the thought, when I'm big, I'm going. So you've got to play it for real. You put tongue-in-cheek or comment on the material, and you're dead.
And, of course, the iconic scene is at FAO Schwartz.
Let's check out.
Adolescence. 3 years. We do. Every day after school.
But the piano that they added at F.A.O. Schwartz didn't play the right notes. You know, it just played, you know?
Right.
So I went to the Aventa. They had written Heart and Soul, but I thought chopsticks visually would be funny, so I made the Aventa. Make me a practical thing that will light up and play the right notes. And all they kept saying, the producers saying, Bobby Greeno, do you want tap dancers to fill in? No! If I could do it, they could do it. That's my theory. If I can do it, anyone could do it. Well, not anyone, but Tom certainly could. And Robert Lozier, who I saw in New York. Tom shooting in Europe. So he made it practical. And they kept bothering me, well, do I need dances? No! What I needed was a click track, which I didn't know that existed. But so that it would be in the same tempo. I mean, it was sort of, but the poor editor, Barry Malkin, who I saw in New York, you know, he had his hands full. Yeah, well, it was the same songs, but, you know, it all started off, you know. But I didn't care if they made mistakes. That's real.
And Tom Hanks had this wonderful childlike quality, of course. He was a child. And Robert Lozier is this big-time businessman who is letting himself go. And the two of them are just delightful in that. It is
yeah,
magic.
I had wanted Ben Gazzara, but he turned it down, the late Ben Gazzara.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I love Ben Gazzara, but he said, I'm a star. I said, yeah, in Italy, you know? But, and his wife at the time said she never forgave him for turning it down.
Yeah.
But Robert Loggia, I knew, played tennis, so he could do the piano thing.
And then you hit the $100 million club.
Yeah, I didn't get it, but the studio did. I don't make that, you know.
Does it mean anything to you in the sense that you were the first to do it? I mean, is there a sense of pride in that?
Well, I'm not that kind of a person. Like, people kept saying that, and I go, oh, yeah, I guess, you know, but it wasn't like I got more money from it, you know? I'm glad it was successful for all concerned.
Yeah.
But, you know, I didn't even know, you know, it wasn't like I got more money, you know? And so did League make it over $100 million.
You went on, you continued to make films and good films, Awakenings and A League of Their Own. And they're good films. Because these days you're saying you'd rather do, okay, television is good for you.
It's faster, and the movies on HBO are better. You know, because all they care about is what will sell foreign. And like I say, I don't do horror, I don't do vampires, I don't do car crashes, I don't do people in big metal suits. It's not my thing. I tell a story. And whether it be a drama like Awakenings, which they didn't quite expect from me. They expected the comedies, but not that. And I started Mark Wahlberg in Renaissance Man. Gave him his first part. Got him out of underwear, the Funky Bunch, whatever that was. I wasn't aware of the Funky Bunch because I had done a lot of period pictures.
Good vibrations. Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch.
Yeah, well, I didn't know the Funky Bunch. Sorry. I knew the underwear thing because I went to junior high with the Calvin Klein.
With Calvin Klein. He says Mark Wahlberg says in the back of the book, I wouldn't have a career without Penny Marshall.
Well, I started him in a different area. I made him, oh, shut up. You're acting now. Get in here. And so he's still my friend. I love him dearly. And he was on 60 Minutes and talked about me, you know?
What do you think it is that makes you a good director? As you say, you're a storyteller, but what makes you a good director?
I think I'm good at picking talent. I think I'm good at giving backstories to the other characters who don't maybe have dialogue, you know, so it fills it out a little bit. And I like behavior. And I do listen to whatever the actors, you know, say, you know, if they have a little quirk or something, you know, that they like to do this so they can't do that. You know, fine. Like Rosie said, I don't slide. Okay, fine. Learn how to pitch for two balls.
Rosie O'Donnell.
Yeah.
Another
great
person
player.
Who you found, really.
Well, she had done something before. I don't know if she did Flintstones or something. But she had done something. But she said, if I'm not right for this movie, I don't belong in this business. And so she was too good a player. That's why I said, you got to lose weight. And Tom, you got to gain weight. Because he was too cute. You couldn't have him, all the girls wanting to date the coach, you know? So he ate his way through Chicago and all of Indiana. Veal, the other white meat, you know?
Mr. Dugan! Mr. Dugan!
What is it, baby?
Driver?
A car could have came by me.
Hey, come on, you girls. We got dinner.
What?
Get on a bus.
What did he say? Is that English?
In A League of Their Own, another classic film about, and not only a classic film, but an important film of putting these women on the map.
Yes, because, you know, some of them were embarrassed, you know, and they were sent home, go back in the kitchen. You know, I was a tomboy, you know, and so I never heard of this story if I didn't hear, but someone else didn't. So I thought, well, let me do it. And the real ladies were in the end.
Which is beautiful.
They were sliding, you know? And they wanted me to go to Syracuse, but I was in New York doing press, so I couldn't quite fly up to Syracuse.
Oh, they had the reunion at the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. And they went to the Hall of Fame. But I went to the reunion in San Diego last year.
Very exciting. And very.
But Syracuse, I was in the middle of this stuff, and I had to leave for Milwaukee, and then I had to get home because I had stuff to do yesterday, and today, and tomorrow, and the next day.
But you get in the, and you drop this at the beginning, but you meet the president, so that's a big deal, obviously.
Yes, that was a great deal, because I got Secret Service, and it was Amazon saying, well, we'll send someone there. No, you can't get in, do you understand? His Secret Service has to clear you, you know, and I was cleared, because I did it in advance. A very nice man. We talked about smoking. He chews the gum. I wear the patch and do the fake cigarettes, you know, the metal ones.
Yeah, Because in the book you write, you're still smoking, but you've since
I
stopped.
Yes, but I still smoke. But when I'm back there, I can't, and when I'm on a plane, I can't. So there are certain places where you can't. My apartment and house, I can do what I want. It's mine.
And is this something you would like to give up, given...
Yes, I gave it up for 8 months.
After the cancer?
I went to the Alan Carr guy came, and I thought this wasn't going to work, and it did for 8 months. Not withdrawal, not anything. I didn't kill anyone. Because I tried to stop before. When I was with Rob, he said, please go back to smoking. because I get a little cranky. So I got to go to someone else here. There's a Russian in Boston, but he's only there certain days, and I don't know when I'm getting to Boston. So someone has someone here that I got to go to. Because I'd like to for 8 months, nothing. But then my friend Monica Johnson died of cancer. Not lung, but other parts. And so there was a thing at her brother, Jerry also, who was my brother's partner, had died previously. And so it was at Joanne Belson's house. So I got up and talked, and that was fine. But then afterwards, they drink. I'm not a drinker. They keep saying I have liver cancer. Nothing was wrong with my liver. I smoked, yes. There was a spot in my lung. And it I can't say the word.
Metastasized.
That's the word. And it went to my brain because the doctor here didn't watch it.
Yeah.
So I was in New York, and I never felt any pain, I must say. I didn't know what they were talking about. So I went to the emergency room because Ronald Perlman, my dear friend, not the actor, the billionaire, had a call waiting downstairs, and I went into Cornell Hospital. And then I went out on Wednesday night to the Bionis thing for the brain injuries thing because Lorraine and I host that every year, which I got to go back to New York and do on the 23rd. And so I said, I'm going. No, you're not. Yes, I am. Otis Anderson's going to be there. If I fall, he'll catch me. He's a big football player. And then on the Friday that I got operated on, by Saturday I was home. Because some of the nurses were a little dumb. I don't like stupidity,
You do not suffer.
I don't have any tolerance.
You do not suffer fools gladly.
I do not do that so well. And so I was so frustrated, I went to light up a cigarette. Luckily, I'm friends with regular people, firemen. Mikey was there. He said, but don't! Because there were oxygen tanks behind me, but I couldn't see behind me. There was a big, giant view, So it was behind me, so he grabbed it, and so they sent me home, which was fine by me. So Ronald supplied 24-hour nurses, and the car was downstairs. That's what they when they told me. I said, is the driver still here? Get me White Castle. And I got home when Sunday, yesterday, a thing from White Castle arrived, a blanket, a thermos, packed in. White Castle sent me a bunch of stuff, because the frozen ones aren't good. You could only get them in New York. So I'm the only one who also gained 60 pounds and got hard nails from the whole experience. No pain whatsoever.
Well, that's,
thank God. But everyone else sort of, loses weight. I gained 60 pounds. So I'm still trying to lose that.
And finally, the news is now that you're working on a documentary about Dennis Rodman.
Yes, I have Radar to the Insane. But I know Dennis from the Bulls. And he's always been very nice to me. I've had him a couple of years back. I had him over for Thanksgiving. He was fine with his kids, and my grandkids ran around. And he came up to the apartment in New York and said, hi, thank God he's in the Legends League. So he's going to South America. He went to Indonesia, China. So that keeps him in shape, They keep booking him in to have a drink with Dennis, the worst thing for an alcoholic.
Mm.
But, when he was mumbling, you should talk to us because I can't with the rings in his mouth, It's hard. Clings clanking. So he came up to say hi. He looks pretty good. He looks in better shape than the last time I saw him. And I've done him 3 times, so I got to go to Dallas and shoot him outside. I got a lot of talking heads, so I need some exterior stuff. And the NBA footage costs a fortune.
Right.
So I need him walking around a little bit. So next time, it's too hot to go to Dallas. I'm sorry. It's hot enough in L.A. I am going to Dallas right now, but I'd like to. I did his mother and his one sister, but there's another sister.
And a fascinating figure.
He is. And look, he got in the Hall of Fame. Look, This is a guy who was a 25-year-old rookie. John Sally and him were drafted the same year. They were roommates, and he was a 25-year-old rookie because he was only 5'7".
Right.
And then he had a 2-year growth spurt of a foot. Both his sisters went to college on basketball scholarships, and his mother worked 3 jobs, you know, because the father ran off to the Philippines, so he wouldn't have to pay child support. So his mom had to work 3 jobs, so he was a mama's boy, really. And then he was short, but she made sure they were somewhere, so while she was working, they weren't roaming. So she made him join this basketball club, and the girls were good, and he was short. But then he grew a foot. That's why someone from Southeast Oklahoma found him. So he went to college for a little bit, and then he was drafted by the Pistons. And he didn't drink, no tats, no dyeing of hair, or anything with the Pistons. And I Skyped with Chuck Daly's daughter the other day in New York. Very nice girl. Who knew him since she was 21, you know?
Mm.
And he'd do the dishes. He was like family.
But now
he's surrounded by some bad people.
I mean, like your mother, a little nuts.
Well, yeah. But we're all a little nuts, buddy. I'm not a drinker. That's one thing. I'm not anything. I got to stop smoking, yes. Which I will do as soon as I'm finished with all this book stuff.
Well, the book is delightful.
Well, thank you.
It's a beautiful memoir. It's called My Mother Was Nuts. It's published by New Harvest. Penny Marshall, it's been an absolute delight to talk to you and a great thrill, and I thank you very, very much for spending time with us.
Well, thank you so much. New England.
Yes.
Okay.
The name of the book, My Mother Was Nuts. It's published by New Harvest. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.